You're listening to a Bucks Plus audio production on the Bucks Plus Network.
Your weekly pulse on the Milwaukee Bucks, straight from a Bucks legend. This is Here District with Marcus Johnson, alongside his son and 1995 NCAA champion, Chris. Here's MJ.
Hey, welcome everybody. This is the Here District. I'm the captain of this vessel on this continual fantastic voyage, the Milwaukee Bucks, and this offseason. This premature offseason. I got my first mate, Chris Johnson. What's up, Chris?
What's happening?
Chris Johnson, Marcus Johnson, the only father and son twosome to win a national championship at the same school, UCLA. Chris is representing the Bruins. And I'm representing God Made and L.A. Raised.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
What's up with the shades, bruh?
Well, you know, we had Ice Cube on, and he was rocking the shades, but he was outdoors. But it just looked so cool and so L.A.-ish and so L.A.-ish. So I thought, you know, I would give it a shot. But I'm having a hard time reading, so I might have to go back to the bifocals during the process of the show. We'll see how it goes. You know, these nice Ray-Bans I got for Christmas about 3 years ago. I don't get a chance to wear them a lot because I'm in Milwaukee a whole lot. But anyway. That's what we're doing today.
All right. Good luck.
You all right with that?
Not really, but it's all good. Well, are you really L.A., though? Are you really L.A.? I mean, I'll just leave that at that. I just really want to know, is MJ really L.A.? Because he spent so much of his life outside of L.A. Are you really L.A., bro?
I haven't spent all that. Well, either Los Angeles or Louisiana. I got the bookends covered. LA could be Los Angeles, it could be Louisiana. But no,
That's real. That's real. We'll cap it there.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, if I can relate to today was a good day, you know, and all the things that Cube talked about when we had him on the show. My favorite ode to LA, Chris, in terms of semi-contemporary, like around the 90s, is what would you guess? My favorite ode to LA. Every time it comes on, I just, you know, hit the shot because I'm faded.
Oh,
honey's on the
Jordan?
Street. Yo, money, yo, we made it.
Wow, no, that's crazy.
Yeah. This is how we do. I mean, it's a whole LA song. It's a whole LA vibe. Hit the shot because I'm faded. You know, that's the reality in my life. Hit the shot because I'm faded.
But yeah, you're not. And I think it's generational, man. I think it's generational when it comes to LA and different generations kind of have a different LA experience. Yeah. And so your generation was obviously the Trailblazers. Mine kind of came along in the 90s, kind of the toughest, not toughest, but just the wild, wild west of LA at the time.
Yeah.
I think, it, you know, we can be kind of keep it 100. You know, it was wild in the 90s in LA. But anyway, man, let's get to the show, man. What's up?
Chris, I was listening to a podcast. I forget the name of it, but Paul George and Carmelo Anthony. So the conversation, though, was about Giannis. The conversation was about Giannis and where he might wind up or whatever, what he's going to do.
Sure.
And it was very interesting, Chris, because both Paul George and Carmelo, two guys that I really respect a lot, both thought that Giannis, because of that European background, they made the comment that European guys tend to be a little bit more loyal than American-born basketball players just because of the appreciation and where they come from. And we know Giannis' story, and we know how the Bucks have nurtured him, embraced him and his family. The community embraced him. So we had some other input talking about Giannis. So we're gonna run down some of the great roster of guests that we've had over the past couple of shows and some of their takes about Giannis. So let's first start off and remind ourselves of what the iconic Ice Cube had to say.
If he stay and get more championships in Milwaukee, his legacy to me would be bigger. You know, that's the right way to do it. You know, if he's at the end of your career, chasing a championship is fine. You know, there's nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're still young and you're still the piece, you know, you want people to come play with you and bring championships where you are, not relocate.
All right, so his legacy would be bigger if he stayed here and won another championship. The point is well taken. I mean, I don't think it's that obvious. It's an obvious point.
Yeah.
But Ice Cube was just commenting on the fact that if you really want to explode your legacy, first of all, if you like a Dirk Nowitzki, if you like a Kobe, you know, if you just stay here with the team that you came in the league with, the team you won a championship with for the first time in 50 years, the team that you got the 50 piece in the closeout game, six against the Sun. If you want to really cement an everlasting legacy, not just in Milwaukee, but I think internationally, staying in Milwaukee and giving this organization a chance to reload so that you can have a legitimate chance to win a second championship, I agree. I mean, that would be the bigger legacy to me than if he went someplace else and tagged on like a Kevin Durant and Golden State and some of these other guys have been able to do, which I'm not hating on.
So you're hating on KD? Finals MVP.
Best player
on that team.
Okay, but
each year he was on the team, he was the best player. He was better than Steph. He was better than Clay, and you're calling him a tag along.
He tagged along with the team that had him down, that he had down 3-1. In the playoffs the prior year and blew a 3-1 lead. And so as opposed to...
If you can't beat him, join him. That's not tagging along.
But that is the essence. You can't even say that with a straight goddamn face. You can't even say that with a straight face. But here's the swing low sweet caveat. The swing low sweet caveat is this. To me, it seems like, and the Celtics in the 60s and late 50s, 60s, Bill Russell, they're dominant. But it seems like Magic, when he came along after winning the championship at Michigan State, winning the championship his rookie year with the Lakers, winning time. And now the paradigm shifted from it's not whether you win or lose, but how you play the game. To like, you ain't crap unless you win a championship. Your career has not been validated unless you win a championship. We see the abuse that Shaq heaps on Charles Barkley.
You're saying that started with Magic? Just the
magnification of that mindset, you know, because he was so successful.
I thought it was LeBron. It wasn't LeBron?
Magic was 1980. LeBron, what?
I know when Magic was, okay? But I'm saying, I thought LeBron ushered in the era of ring culture. So you're not nothing unless you got the rings. Jordan, 6-0.
LeBron came into the league when? Magic came in 1979.
MJ, I get that. But I'm just telling you from a standpoint of how it's viewed, the importance. So you're saying...
I'm giving you a historical perspective.
And I'm asking you as a rebuttal from the 70s, just to give some introspective kind of insight. So in the 70s, there wasn't a big kind of emphasis on winning the title when you were a rookie in your first couple years. Just about you guys.
That's why I bring up the Celtics. Celtics were so dominant in the 60s, early 70s. Oscar left Cincinnati and partnered with Kareem to win a championship with the Bucks in 1971. But the emphasis... I'm talking about the public conversation wasn't out there until Magic. It's because Magic, you know, high school championship, Michigan State championship. He's all about championship, all about winning. It's winning time. As you know, that it's all about. If you don't have a ring, it's almost like if you didn't have a ring, you weren't validated as a player unless you had a ring. And that kind of started with Magic in terms of winning championships in the 80s.
Was there any of that? There was none of that with Bill Russell back in the day during his dominant run.
Well, see, they were so dominant that you didn't. They were just so. It was almost a foregone conclusion. I mean, you had
like UCLA, kind
of. Yeah, exactly. But you had the Lakers, who were always kind of the bridesmaids, you know, the runner ups to them. And I remember growing up in those times. And I even jumped on the Celtic bandwagon, you know, in the 1960s, mid-60s, 10 years old, watching the game with your grandfather and your grandmother and my sisters. And I pulled in for the Celtics, and they got so mad at me, they held me down and started pinching me. Wow. Oh, you going to pull for the Celtics, huh? Come here, boy. But the point being, so I'm not mad at KD for that. But let's get back to Giannis. Giannis, you know, I just think there's some value, tremendous value, and to stand in Milwaukee and allowing John Horst and crew to try and reload, you know, and see what happens. So with that, let's go to our next opinionated guest, the ever popular Chris Mad Dog Russo.
Now, I think there is something to the idea that you start your career in one place and you finish your career in one place. You know, I think that helps Jordan in relationship to LeBron, since LeBron, Cleveland, Miami, Cleveland, Lakers, and Jordan played his whole career in Chicago.
Yeah.
You know, Bird played his whole career in one spot. There's a little cachet when you can play your whole career in the one spot. But as far as just relationship to a city. And that's a great sports town. You know, Kareem won a championship there. They had great teams with your father there, Chris, with Don Nelson coaching the ball club. You know, then, of course, with Glenn Robinson and Allen and Castle, Cassell. And all, I would hate to see him leave.
Okay, so single team star, you know, committed to a small market team. Mad Dog likes that about Giannis. In today's NBA, Chris, your take on this, does it matter? So, again, here's the difference. When I played, it was all about getting to Los Angeles, getting to New York, or getting to Chicago.
Yeah.
Everything else was kind of incidental. These are the big market cities, and this is where the media markets and everybody feels like this is where all the attention was garnered back then, which is on point. Today, with the plethora of platforms and media outlets and coverage of the NBA, does it matter if you're not in a big market?
I don't think it matters from a standpoint of like endorsements or marketing.
Yeah.
I just don't think it matters as much because you can reach so many people in so many different ways now. Yeah. It almost helps you more, in my opinion, being from a smaller market, because now you have like, you're like the king of the state,
yeah,
the king of the hill. So like Giannis is the king of Wisconsin. And some of these guys are like, you know, Evan Mobley, the king of Ohio. I mean, it's like, it's okay to be a big fish in a smaller pond. I like that concept. So I don't think it matters at all anymore like it used to.
Yeah.
The Lakers being in LA or New York just simply don't have the same cachet that it used to have because of how technology has basically made, you know, fast forwarded and evolved our society. So now business is just done differently. You don't got to be in these hubs anymore to get certain things going.
Well, the game is so much more international now. It's about the international marketing.
Yeah,
so,
really, it is.
Yeah,
that's so number one. Like, okay. How are your jerseys doing in China? Like, exactly. That's the question.
Exactly, exactly. All right, let's move on. Dave McMenamin, he makes a very interesting case. Take a listen to what Dave had to say.
I know we are accustomed to the conversation with superstars in this league being, well, it's not going well here. What's the next stop they're going to demand to go to? But just because that's happened with those other guys doesn't mean it's going to be the Giannis Antetokounmpo story.
Yeah.
Listen, I covered Kobe Bryant for 6 years in Los Angeles. He played 20 seasons with the Los Angeles Lakers. There were times when he went on national TV and said, I'd rather play on Pluto than play for the Lakers. And guess what? He never played for any other team. If you look at the whole of what he's been able to accomplish in Milwaukee, Giannis has the multiple MVPs, the championship, the finals MVP, becoming a world-class icon, and certainly having a franchise that values him and his input when it comes to player personnel decisions, when it comes to coaching decisions. All those things can't be taken for granted. And quite frankly, he's not in a position where he needs to feel the urgency to go chase a ring somewhere else because he's already proven it, that he did it himself with the team where he started his career.
Giannis is not a guy who needs to follow anybody. Back then, you know, he was looking for mentorship. You know, he was willingly listening to old school guys like myself. Right now, he's done so much, accomplished so much, feels so comfortable in who he is as a basketball player. You know, remember he went out and worked out with Kobe and just was all effusive about that experience and showed up early when he worked out with Kobe. I don't know. I don't think Giannis.
You think Giannis has done enough?
Well, just in I'm talking about more of him being comfortable with who he is right now and his position in the pantheon of basketball greatness, two-time MVP, champion. Seven times all pro, I forget the number, but seven or eight times first team. He's doing things that you know, very few other NBA players in the history of the game have been able to accomplish in terms of his the MVP top three the last 5 or 6 years. I mean, that's heady stuff.
I mean, in the same vein as Giannis is breaking these records and doing all this, there's still other people in the NBA, like, you know, that are doing, Jokic in particular. Like, yeah. I feel like, you know, for Giannis, I think motivation for him would be that guy.
Okay. That's a good take. And then let's go to Jamal Collier.
As I reported, and really think the thing that's a lot of people miss just looking at Giannis from the outside, he's a very loyal person. Yeah. He has doubled down and tripled down on Milwaukee with every single chance he's had. He's signed an extension here. He does like playing here. He really likes playing for Doc Rivers. He trusts John Horst in the front office. And there's a lot of advantages that I think that I know that he enjoys playing about Milwaukee. So anybody thinks that he's got a foot out the door and will leave this situation lightly if and when that day has come, that is certainly not how I see it.
All right. So loyalty and $8 will get me a Starbucks coffee in the morning. Is that true or false? How much is loyalty worth today?
It really depends on who it is and how they're built, honestly. And you heard Giannis talk about it. He's built different. As a player in today's NBA, if you were playing in today's NBA, like, would you be loyal? Would loyalty be at the top of your list? When you see things like guys trading Luka Doncic for AD and, you know, you just realize that you're no matter who you are.
Yeah.
You are a commodity, and you can be moved.
We got to break this up a little bit because we've just been joined by, a guy that I'm looking at Instagram, Chris, and I see this page on Instagram, the Guard Whisperer, Olin Simplice's page, and then I see the most valuable player. I see the defensive player of the year, Evan Mobley. I see the sixth man of the year, Peyton Pritchard. I see the NBA Rookie of the Year, Steph Castle, and they all have one thing in common. They all have one thing in common. Outwork. They work with this guy here, Olin Simplice. Olin, welcome to here, District, man. We appreciate you being here, man.
Obear,
hey, in the house.
Hey, man, all is good.
Well, you stay in the gym, man. What's the feeling like with Shea? I mean, just did you have any inkling in your wildest imagination when you first got with him in around what 2017-ish or so, or maybe seven, 8 years ago, did you have any inkling that this guy could develop to be the top player in the world right now, as of today?
Look here, I don't want to sound not arrogant, probably the wrong term, but you know, when people agree to stuff like that, sometimes it's not believable. But yeah, I'm on record in Slam Magazine doing the pre-draft process that, man, this kid going to be one of the best players in the league. I actually think he's the best player in the draft. And that was before we knew who Luka was. You know, you always hear about these guys overseas, and many times they don't pan out like the hype. So I was like, you know, I didn't want to be arrogant, but just the things that this kid did in the gym as far as, you know, it sounds simple, but just his attention to detail, his competitive nature, his competitiveness, and then the stuff off the court. You know, he's not out, he's not partying. His only vice is fashion. So shopping and not a kid back then, I just knew there was a day that he would be one of the best players in the league, for sure.
Olin, you said in a Yahoo article, I think 2019, you said Shea was wired like the great ones. He thinks he's the best player on the floor. Talk about how that mentality serves him to his advantage in the NBA.
I mean, look, you got the LeBrons, you got the Kobes, you got Mikes, the stories you hear about these guys. I was never blessed enough to be on the court, like physically working out with these guys, but I've been in the presence watching, and there's that it factor, right? It's like an actor or like a rapper, like you can't put your finger on, they just got that it thing. And I knew back then, man, he just wanted to be great. He carries that mindset that I'm the best no matter what. And if I'm not the best, I'm gonna work my ass off at it. And it's crazy. I don't know if it was you, Mr. Johnson, or somebody else. I was watching the game and they were like, he got it. And the co-host, I can't recall if it was you or Mark Jones, or, you know, because you guys always show me a little love, which I appreciate, you know, during the game. Yeah. Was like, what do you mean he has it? Like, he wants to be great. And the rebuttal was, but don't they all? Not all these guys want to be great. They comfortable with what the game can give them, but they don't give the game what they got. You know, once they get there, it's like, I'm good. This kid giving the game all he got, and he wants to be the best. He's a big Kobe fan. And it's just certain things, that mindset, that when you're around these guys that people don't know, like the intangibles. And, man, that kid is something else. He's something else.
Man, just rattle off the top of your head just some of the players that you have worked with over these years that you've been involved with the NBA, developing, skill developing.
Oh, man, it's crazy because I've been blessed to work with Manny. So from the four you named, I've been in the gym with KD a little bit. I've been in the gym with James Harden a little bit, Spencer Dinwiddie. I mean, Steven Adams. I mean, like from stars to non-stars to outside, you know, guys that's getting back in the league. It's been a lot of guys, honestly. Last year's draft class, you know, we had three guys that was in the top five for rookie of the year. Kessler Edwards was out the league. He came to us last summer. He started for Dallas this year as a two-way guy. Those are the stories that I'm most proud of. You know, you get guys that work with some of these players for a few weeks or a summer, and, you know, they're already established. Yeah, you can help them, but, you know, just getting guys like that back in the league. You know, Yuta Watanabe was a fringe guy, really wasn't playing. We started working with him, made a name for himself, was at one point the top three-point shooter in the NBA. So, I mean, I've worked with a lot of guys. Yeah. You know, it's hard for me to rattle off top, but definitely a lot of, you know, fringe guys, second-tier guys, and all-star level guys for sure.
Oh, talk to me about, like, your process when you're dealing with, like, say, a Shea, and you want him to add things or there needs to be some improvement. His game needs to evolve. What's that process look like? I read, you know, you do a lot of film study, but what's the process and how you build out a player's toolkit? I think that term was used. Well, you'll like identify some tools, some skills that they may need to add to their game because of your film study, and then you implement it on the floor. Talk to us about that.
I have an 80-20 formula, sometimes 70-30, and depending on who you are. So like a guy like Shea, he's on the 80% side. We're 80%. 70% we evolve in your game, but two to three things, right? We don't focus on too many things in offseason. Two to three things that I feel can help you, but there's also that back and forth communication, right? Like, you got to have some input to what we're going to work on offseason. And then guys that are like role players, it's flipped. 70%, 70, 80%, you working on playing off stars. Your whole summer may be sitting in the corner, catch a shoe, and we putting you through defensive drills all summer just so we can make sure you can play next to guys. And as you make a team, or your role become established a little bit, now we expand. But it's a trust thing. I sit down with these guys. So, like, let's use Steph Castle because I'm going through the process with him now. So this summer, the beginning of summer, we sat down with over some film, and I'm trying to add some shade. And he's 6'6", 6'7", and I'm huge on guards touching the paint. Shea touched the paint. Jalen Brunson touched the paint. Let's not fall victim to the current way of doing things, NBA shooting threes. Like, you're 6'7", you should touch that paint 60, 70% of the time, whether it's turning a post, turning your drive into a post. So we do a lot of post work with Steph this year. We're going to refine his shooting. And just those two things, if we just did those two things, he averaged 17 as a starter and 15, you know, coming off the bench this season. You refine your three-point shooting. That becomes free throws as well. Yeah. And you get 4 to 5 paint touches as a post player. You go from 17 to 24 with the same amount of touches or less. So basically the current system they're in, we look at their role currently. And then we just try to evolve out. Like a kid like Cam Reddish, right? He's come to me this summer. Very talented. One of the most talented kids I've had the opportunity to work with. But the knock on Cam, you know, is that he don't work hard, this and that, and he has to fight that stigma now. So all we doing is shooting, and I'm playing D. So he got his next step is to transition to kind of like a 3-and-D guy. So we watching film of Aaron Nesmith, how he plays D, baseline to baseline, fighting over screens. We looking at film Lou Dort. That's who you are. That's who you're going to be right now. Then let's get back to Cam one day. But just being honest with these guys, my job is to help these dudes get to their next contract. I'm not trying to be these guys' friends, and I think a lot of these guys feel that and they get that. We're not here to train for me. Like Chris, you know, I mean, Marcus, you know as well. If I put these guys through some of the drills and stuff that's sexy for IG, I'd probably have 2 million followers. A lot of our time is born basic, but it's what's beneficial to them. And that's where I think me and my team, we excel, man. We're more focused on the player than we are our brand. And then you end up having success that way, I personally feel.
Well, a couple of things, though, and I'm asking for a friend, not necessarily for myself, but Steph Castle, how good can he be? Can he be a franchise-level superstar in this league? I'm asking for a friend, not me. I'm just curious.
Hey, man, Steph Castle could be the next one soon. When I mean soon, like now, you know, like man, the kid is phenomenal. And he's a lot bigger than people know until they get up on him. He's legit 6'6", 6'7", 220. He's like, he's big, you know, and he's an uber athlete. He can shoot a lot better than people think, but we're definitely going to lock in on that. And people didn't realize in high school, I had him since his junior year in high school. He's a point guard. So when he went to UConn, he also knows how to play the game of basketball and how to play off stars. But, man, you just think about him and Wemby. I mean, you got a dynamic 7'4 guy, and then you got a point guard as dynamic as him. I honestly think he can be in that conversation with Shea and, like, Kate Cunningham, really big guards that you really can't do anything with. You at their mercy.
Oh, let me get back to Shea. Now, during these playoffs, fan bases started this whole foul merchant thing, and then Doris Burke got on ESPN, was calling him a free throw merchant or whatever. What part, like, how? What's your take on that concept of Shea playing the game, kind of like Harden used to, looking for fouls? And is it something, because I view it as an advantage, is it something that you guys actually work on?
So, we'd never worked on that because he's a big guard. What we did work on, which he's benefiting from today, is that, dude, you're 6'6". Don't let up. Foot on gas. You're going to get the benefit of the call. He's only shooting 8 to 9 free throws a game. He lives in the paint. You're going to get calls how you play. We always say the aggressor get the benefit of calls. Some of them, does he overshow to get the calls? Maybe. But you can't fight a guy that's always touching the paint. I mean, he lives in the paint. So, no, we talked about that earlier in his career. Same thing we're doing with Steph and Evan a little bit this year. It's like, man, utilize the rules to your advantage, not oversell it. I don't like to oversell. But, bro, I can't touch you. They're allowing people to touch you more in the playoffs now. I love the way the game's being called in the playoffs. But, you know, freedom of movement is beneficial to the offensive player. Use that to your advantage. I can't touch you. Yeah. Literally, it's like a boxer can't throw a punch back. Man, I'm coming.
Well, when they first got soft with these head check rules, and this is just a quick story. I was playing with Norm Van Leer at the tail end of his career, my second year in Milwaukee O, and he got so pissed off at the way they were calling touch fouls, he played 2 or 3 possessions with his hands behind his back, and he got ejected. Actually, the officials, Earl Strom, felt so shown up by what he was doing, he threw him out the game. But listen, Giannis, man, I would have loved to have seen you get with Giannis, especially early in his career. He's done well for himself. But looking at Giannis's game, Giannis has talked about, Olin, that his next phase of development, of evolution as a basketball player, is more from the playmaking angle. What would you say, if you had Giannis in Glendale, in your gym right now, what would you be working with Giannis on?
I would be working the connection from his bottom, his lower body to his top. You know, there's, I believe in sequence when you're shooting. If you ever notice Giannis at the free throw line, by the time the ball reaches shot pocket, his legs are fully extended. There's no synergy between his hips and elbow. I believe those work in alignment. Like the big kid Nick Claxton a couple summers ago, same way he shot his free throws, fully extended by the time the ball got here. We just worked on pocket, then hips, and his free throws and shot change. You Giannis adds that to his game. I mean, he becomes even more dynamic. I like the concept that he'll be more of a playmaker, but, I mean, if guys are going to be backing off, you still have to be an offensive threat. You still have to be able to shoot that ball. You know, I watch a lot of film on him. The irony is I don't know if it was last summer or summer before, you know, everybody rely on social media to contact you. So the younger brother, they reached out to me on IG, but I wasn't following the younger brother. So it was in that inbox that's like.
Yeah, the request.
And so I didn't see the message until 3 weeks later, and they moved on and found somebody else. And Marcus, you know, I've been wanting to work with Giannis. Giannis is one of my favorite players, man. I love guys like him, Russ, guys that play with that grit, that passion, bring it every night. Man, he's like a dream client for me, most definitely. Like, I know that I can help him in you know, some small pockets in his game that'll make a huge difference. But, nah, man, I mean, he's phenomenal. He's phenomenal. Wow.
Man, I wish you would have checked your inbox a little sooner, but that'd have been a great
1,000%.
It's all good. But listen, so other Bucks. Any other of the Bucks that you're familiar with between AJ Greens and Ryan Rollinses that you can talk about their games in terms of where they're going? I mean, AJ Green is a great shooter. I mean, when you get a great shooter like that, do you try and expand the other aspects of his game, or just try and accentuate what he's got going on and that has made him successful as a basketball player this season?
because I know he shot it well, but I would focus on still shooting out that ball and being one hell of a defender. I mean, you got guys like Lou Dort, Alex Caruso, they can pay a lot of money for playing defense and hitting the big shots. I mean, I think Aaron Nesmith is making a name for himself. Like, there's roles for guys like that.
Yeah. And my question would be, like, when we kind of drill down into the details of, say, like an A.J. Green's game, like, let's talk about just like a pump fake, one bounce, sidestep.
Oh, for sure.
Becoming efficient, you know, both ways, or, you know, two dribble. You know what I mean? Like, I think
1,000%.
Yeah. 1,000%. Because that's important. Because those are skill sets in the league. Yeah. Like, you got to have it now. You got to have especially those when options you show you, off a shooter.
Yeah, especially when you show you can knock down 44% of your three-point shots. You got to chase you off that line.
Yeah, no, I think that's an easy evolution. I thought we were talking about more so getting in the ball hand and playmaking, creating for others. No, I think if you're a knockdown shooter, the game becomes easy, right? Because every little eye contact, every little here, a defender's going to respond. So your handle don't need to be necessarily that tight, but you definitely can have a 1-3 dribble game, whether it's an escape dribble, whether it's a blow by, 1-2 dribble pull up. That would definitely be something for sure I would focus on.
Another guy that I love, Ryan Rollins. I don't know how familiar you are with him. Went to Toledo, 6'4", always got about a 6'11 wingspan. He had several career highs, had a few 20-point games. He started when Dame was in and out of the lineup with injuries. But he's a guy that embraced who he is as a player, feel more comfortable on the court. How do you get your clients, guys that are on the precipice, man, of taking that next step up to being a regular solidly contributing rotation guy? How do you get into their mindset to make them feel like I belong out here with this elite level of player?
Man, we do a lot of reading. I start a book club with all my guys, you know, because the mental approach, the confidence space, that's very important. I mean, like you said, we can do all the work on the floor, but if you don't believe in yourself or you don't have that mental fortitude to go out there, and because you're going to have some failures too. But so, I mean, we do a lot of reading. We do a lot of mental stuff. And then we make the workouts hard because I believe the workouts got to be harder than the game. And if that happens, I think it tends to transition the game. And then communication, right? I stay in contact with the guys throughout the years. There's a post with me and Shea when he first got to OKC that he said, like, you know, there's going to be tough nights like this, but, you know, the work me and O put during the summer, he knows that it's there. So it's staying in contact. You know, we, as a trainer, the guys trust you. You're no longer a trainer. You're your family, you're a psychologist, your brother, your mentor. So it's like, you don't leave them hanging doing tough points in the season. You stay in tune, you know, a lot of film session. But and then you remind them, you know, end of the day, only 450 guys play this game. Then you got another few hundred in the G League. There's 800 to 900 motherfuckers playing this game. You're a one percenter. So to be a one percenter, you have to think highly of yourself to some regard. So just keep reminding them who they are.
Staying on that, though, like, Dinwiddie sounds like a guy that, to me, MJ, you're kind of describing, a guy that went from a certain level to 20 points a game. Oh, how much work did you put in with Spencer that the summer that he averaged about 20 a game?
So that summer, it's crazy, bro. Like that summer was epic. He came back to LA because the summer before, his agent had him somewhere else. He wasn't really working out with us. And then that's the year I think he was in with Chicago, G League out, then came to Brooklyn. So that summer, man, he came back home. We was 6 a.m., 9 a.m., 6 p.m., beach, and we just worked relentlessly. Yeah. And then he came in a train. So it goes back to our percentage, right? That year you had D'Lo, and you had Jeremy Lin, who had established himself. He was coming in for those guys. So it was that 70-30 split. So 70%, man, we was just catch and shoot from all over the floor. We had 2-3 pick and roll reads because we knew the ball wasn't going to be in your hand. First read is under, go under, elevating up. Second read is just, if it's drop coverage, get to that midi. Third is just getting the paint and kick. Like, you're not going to have screen, re-screen, snap. That's not what it is. So we spent 70% of the time playing off D'Lo and Jeremy Lin, and just working his psyche. Then he came into camp, played really well in preseason, had a couple games earlier play well. Then both them guys happened to get hurt at a certain point, and I think he jumped up to that 20-point game, and I think he was runner-up for most improved. I thought he should have got most improved because Victor Oladipo, who I also trained, and so I don't want to say this that manner, but when you the number two pick, you get a different type of rope. So when people get the number two pick, most improved, it's hard for me to. You're getting a rope. Spencer came to training camp not knowing if he was going to be on the team because his contract carried him through training camp. He could have got released at the end and had nowhere to go. That's a different mindset for you to come from that, not knowing what's going on, getting 1 to 3 touches and going from 3 to 5 and 7 to 9 and be most improved versus a lottery pick where you're going to get the ball. You're going to get your opportunity. So,
it's different.
You know,
it's different.
Yeah. Nah, that was a big summer. That was a big year. You know, I think that changed his whole trajectory of his career as well as financially.
Yeah. Well, a couple of things. When you were working out my son Cyrus, when he was about 14, 15, so about 10 years ago, Spencer was a young player. He got cut by the Pistons or somebody. I mentioned his name because I'd watched you work out with him, and I saw how diligent and committed he was to getting better. I mentioned him to one of the Buck executives. That would have been a guy I would have loved.
I remember that because you called me. You called me like, man, do you think? I'm like, bro, Spencer would be perfect.
Yes,
because,
yes.
Because people don't realize because he did up his scoring to 20. Spencer's a point guard. Like, he knows how to get guys a ball in the spot. Even that year he averaged 20. You know, NBA have all these analytics, but it's crazy, right? They had one where, based on percentage where guys are successful shooting, the spots that he was getting guys the ball to, he had the highest.
Wow.
I use potential because I don't know, potential assists. Like, he should be averaging 13.5 or some. He just knows how to get guys balls in his spots. And he's a high IQ guy, very high IQ. And then defensively, I mean, he's 6'6", long arms. He can guard multiple positions.
Well, let's talk about another guy, 6'6", defensive-minded, that is a unrestricted free agent, so there's no guarantee he'll be back. But I want your opinion on him, kind of where his game can get to. Kevin Porter Jr., you know, he was with the Clippers. We picked him up around the All-Star break for Marjon Beauchamp. Well, I hear you.
He's an enigma.
What's going on with KPJ?
I've been a big fan of KP since high school, man. Like, he's a very talented basketball player. I think it's just a matter of being in a stable environment and allowing his game to flourish. He'd be one of them kids where you look at it like, yo, who is this kid? Like, he has all of it. You know, you got to learn how to play the game a little. You know, he likes to dance with it a little bit. I think you guys mentioned James Harden earlier. You know, he was on his way to being like James Harden 2.0 is what they were saying early. Yeah. He's a kid that when you guys got him, I was excited for. I think Giannis even said, man, he was excited about him. He's a sleeper with one of the guys that you guys picked up. Like, I think with a good summer and some stability, he could actually be that dynamic guard that can help Giannis. He can get in the paint, create for others. Giannis needs somebody that can help him create shot for himself as well as others. Because all Giannis is buckets right now. To me, a high percentage, just tough buckets. He needs someone that can create and make plays for him as well.
Yeah. Make life easy.
Well, listen, man, and then the final point for me on this is, and I try to convince some of these younger Bucks over the years, DJ Wilson, other guys, to come out to L.A. and play, and Marjon Beauchamp, come out and play in the Drew Summer League. Just get that up and down experience with a semi hostile crowd that's talking trash, and if you get taken or your shot blocked or whatever. What's your thoughts on that experience, Summer League experience? I mean, I know it's not the ideal, but just in terms of the Drew League, I know you're familiar with the Drew guys playing with the Drew who are like a Jericho Sims, just come out and get touches and have to be an offensive force down low and score the basketball. It's not going to happen during the season, but there's going to be opportunities, limited opportunities where you get some shots around the bucket that you got to knock down. But your thoughts about Summer League, Drew League, their place in terms of a player's overall development?
Live reps is live reps. You know, I've if you get live reps anywhere, I'm a big fan for it. You know, I think KD said it best, man. Playing 5-on-5 is, you know, guys don't get live reps. It's funny. Let's go back to Detroit real quick. So Tim Hardaway was on staff at Detroit when Spencer was there. He said, man, these guys don't pick a ball up and hoop no more. Like, after practice, guys is gone. He used to have to beg guys to play ones, play twos, play threes. I think live reps in the offseason is so important. Wherever you can get live reps, it just instills confidence. And also, it helps you work on your quote-unquote bag as opposed to just going 1-on-0 against me. Like, I'm not guarding you anymore. All my interns are you're going against athletic guys that play the game. I think it helps evolve your game a little bit, as well as your psyche and your confidence. Funny you mentioned Jericho Sims. He's supposed to be coming to summer to work out with me, so we'll see. Yeah, we'll see.
Let me know. And you, to speaking of Tim Hardaway, so when he got to Golden State as a rookie, Don Nelson was the coach. I had been out of the league 2.5 years, rusty, old, 33 years old. But Tim was my rookie, and he would almost force me to play one-on-one with him after every practice just to, hey, old man, you want to get it back? Oh, man, you need to get it back. You need to get out here.
Right.
But I had this propensity, Chris, to like only be able to make one shot. And then miss the next two or three, make one shot. He gave me a new nickname. He started calling me one in a row. He said, you're one in a row. but you reminded me of that when you talked about how he talked about guys don't pick up a basketball. But
Jericho, do you guys notice that?
Without question, on all levels. I got a daughter Shiloh that you've worked out at out in Glendale at your facility. I mean, and she just started going to 24-hour fitness running with the guys kind of at nighttime. So that was like, you know, music to my ears when she's like, I want to go up here and play some 5-on-5. And that to me is like you're saying, that's live reps. That's one of the most important things in terms of overall development, putting into practice, you know, against live defense, which you have learned in drills. Those cones don't move. You know, the cones don't make you have to have any counter take. So
I very rarely do 1-on-0 workouts now. I mean, it's been a long time since, unless you know the time don't work. I very rarely do 1-on-0. Like even if it's a group, I know every guy has certain things that they need to work on, focus on. So we do that within the workout, but then you have bodies to go against. I believe in competing after most workouts. You know, 80% of our workouts, you know, we compete after, whether it's ones, whether, you know, we put them in situations where they fighting over screens and going live, or they're the help defender closing out from the net, whatever the case may be. It's just we try to replicate some part of the game every day we in the gym. And it's just work, you know, but it's the hardest thing to get people like, all right, now let's hoop. You got to hoop, man.
It's just work. It's just work.
That's it, man. We got the guard whisperer in the building.
We got the guard. Where'd that name come from? I mean, how'd you come up with that? The guard whisperer.
Man, I didn't come up with it. It was one of these. You know, at the time, it's funny. Spencer was doing well. Shea was doing well. Peyton was starting to hoop, and I was doing an interview. I'm like, man, you're a guard whisperer, and I just rolled with it. You know, it just worked, you know?
Yeah.
So, and the crazy thing, is that even at when you were a player, because we go 30 years, we go way back.
Crazy.
You always had a deep, deep bag. You had a bag that was well before its time.
Olin had a bag at Pally?
Bro, Olin was going to give you 50.
I didn't know that aspect of it. I had him over in Belize with Palou in the game back in the
90s. He busted us that game.
Yeah.
Nah, it's funny that Chris brought it up, man. You know, back when I played, man, I only played a year and a half of high school ball. I was a kid from Belize, and Baron Davis to this day, if you talk to Baron, like, oh, I used to watch you, like, you know, Jason Major Hart. Game. I didn't realize, you know, because the city back then, as you guys know, because you guys played for one of the most prestigious schools ever, it was condensed. So every time I went to Pally to beat y'all, you know, I didn't want to play with y'all. I didn't want to play with Fairfax. I didn't want to play with Dorsey. I didn't, you know, and I gave, you know, my numbers was 28, 12, and 6. I don't think too many walked through, you know. And just a quick story, Marcus, the reason I got into coaching and doing this is my senior, I only played my junior year, and I had a really strong, you know, every time you step on the floor, you see a Chris Johnson, you see a Tremaine Folks, you see a Gumby, you see a James, you know what I mean? You see a Charles O'Bannon, you see, it's like, so back then came to watch y'all play, and I was building a name off who I was playing against. So my senior, I was getting recruited heavy, and, you know, me and my coach got into a little situation. I walked off the bench, sat in the stand. So needless to say, people was recruiting me kind of turned their backs. You know, I had a bad attitude. You didn't have time to recover, and that was it. And so then I had a kid my freshman year of junior college, and I became a coach a lot sooner than I wanted to. But I wanted to coach the 16-year-old Olin that didn't have fathers or uncles in his life. Like, I was raised by eight women. Mm-hmm. And, you know, didn't have a father, no uncle, no AAU coach, didn't know what that was. I turned ABCD camp down to go to Michigan camp. So if I went to ABCD camp, if I knew what it was, it was like – But I say all that to say, I wanted to work with the, you know, kid that looked like me, came from single mother home. Yeah. I knew that early. And then, you know, it just happened a lot faster than anticipated. And here's the crazy part. A kid just came to shake my hand to say bye. This is how small the world is. And y'all know the dad. So Trevor Ariza was the first kid I ever coached. Mm-hmm. Now his son Tristan just came to say bye. He's in my academy. So it's like, I'm still doing it.
Yeah, yeah. Man, well, man, keep doing what you're doing, man. And one day there's going to be some NBA franchise that's going to
smarten up
and recognize and look at the roster player. You talk about Victor Oladipo. He went from a little overweight and kind of okay. I remember that summer he came out here, worked out with you, and he got live. I mean, his game just turned completely around. So one day somebody's going to smarten up, man, and just turn their whole development situation with an NBA team over to you, man. And you're worthy of it. You deserve it. I've been watching you for 12 years now. And it's remarkable in terms of what you're doing out there.
Facts.
Now, I appreciate you guys. You know, it's a blessing you guys are doing something. Like I tell Mark Jones all the time, and as well as you, Mark, is that guys that look like us, we normally look at each other as competition. You guys uplifting the culture, the community. You guys giving guys like me a face. Normally, you know, the others, they get the love, they get the promotion, they get this. And our very own, you know, we take the elevator. We pull the ladder up. And you guys always bring the elevator back down. So now I appreciate it, not just for me, but for all the other trainers out there that look like me. You and Mark do an exceptional job of showing love to the ones in the trenches, you know, and it's very important. So my goal is to keep pushing back and giving back like you guys are doing.
Appreciate you, man. Appreciate you so much. We got to get you back